So this is a five-part series based loosely on my book. Try to compile some of my thoughts, religious responses, moral responses, trying to drill down to this crisis and trauma that we're facing and provide for myself primarily some direction, some guidance, some search for meaning and for faith. In the first section, I described how this is not just a military battle and an attack against our land and our people, but it's an attack against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his place in this world. It happened in our land, to our people, on Simchas Torah, on Shabbos, and the barbarians who launched this attack speak in the name of a God who doesn't exist. Hashem is merciful. Hashem doesn't pursue or celebrate death or loss of innocent life. In the second section, I try to itemize two or three religious differences between Islamic fundamentalism and between Avodas Hashem, between our religion, Asheinu Matov Chalkeinu. Do we celebrate life or do we have a death wish? Do we see God as merciful, as I mentioned before, and therefore when the world is defective, we want to improve it? Do we celebrate and preserve Tzelem Elokim, that we are different, we are a different part of Hashem's creation? In the third section, I want to talk about how anti-Semitism has been awakened by this war. Essentially, I think there are four layers to this war. There are four wars taking place, and then there's one project called the National Project of Unity. The obvious war is the military, geographical, political war. The second layer to the war is the war I spoke about in part two, the war of religious values, how people see religion and see Hashem in this world. And the third war is, of course, a battle of anti-Semitism. We thought it would be different. We thought that back in our land, with our peoplehood and with robust Jewish communities around the world, anti-Semitism would not rear its head. We're in a modern world of tolerance, of enlightenment, of equality. But yet, evidently, we're still living through the medieval feel of anti-Semitism. And I want to discuss some of the aspects of anti-Semitism, which, of course, Jewish history is cyclical, so whatever happened in the past will happen again, just in modern manifestations. You have to train your eyes to see through the shell, see through the externals and look into the heart of these cultural events because history cycles upon itself. A big question that people are inquiring or probing is anti-Zionism equivalent to anti-Semitism? Can I oppose the state of Israel? And I don't mean oppose political positions of the state of Israel. That's obvious. That's a political question. You can, and every Jew can, and non-Jew can. But if I oppose the concept of the state of Israel, which we never thought would be held in the would be put into question. Over the last 75 years, people question our right to live in this part of Israel, to live in that part of Israel. Obviously, our Muslim haters in the Islamic world doesn't want us to be here, but across the world, the enlightened Western world, no one questioned the right of the state of Israel to exist. And yet now it is being openly questioned. From river to the sea essentially implies that the Jewish state should cease to exist. And many people are claiming, well, my anti-Zionism or anti-Israel position isn't anti-Semitic. I'm not opposing Jews. I'm just opposing Jews living in the land of Israel. I think that theoretically the two can be separated. Namely, you can oppose the state of the Jews without opposing the right of Jews to live. But with two very, very strong caveats. And those caveats are so strong they have to be very, very carefully questioned before you leap into that severing of the two. Number one, history has proven that without a state for the Jews, Jewish survival is very tenuous, is very delicate. And to lay the claim that there doesn't need to be a Jewish state because Jews can exist as a foreign implant through host countries, that experiment has been tried before countless times for thousands of years. Anti-Semitism did not begin in 1948. Arab anti-Semitism did not begin in 1948. Arab blood libels did not begin in 1948. Expulsion of Jews did not begin in 1948. So the transition of history to a Jewish state and a homeland for the Jews, where Jewish identity will be protected, Jewish peoplehood will be preserved, where Jews will be allowed to live in safety and security, that shift in history is vital for Jewish survival. So in theory, you're right. In theory, a Jew can live, and if, again, assuming you're not a redemptive Jew like I am and like we are, but a Jew can live somewhere else. He doesn't have to live in the state of Israel. But unfortunately, that experiment hasn't really been so successful. And the second question is that it's very, very easy for anti-Zionism and anti-Israel sentiment to bleed into anti-Semitism. And you see it at the protests, and you see it in the cliches, and you see it. And it happened in Purim. The 10 children of Haman, according to Chazal, wrote letters in Sefer Ezra Perek Dalet back to Achashverosh to halt the construction of the Beis HaMikdash and to thwart Jewish expansionism. And then a few years later in Paras or Madai, these Aseres B'nai Haman were fomenting Jewish genocide or fomenting people towards Jewish genocide. So in theory, can a person be anti the state of Israel as a state of the Jewish people, but support the right of Jews to live on this earth? Of course, but history has proven that without the state of Israel, the Jews are not, Jewish survival is not assured. And number two, very, very often, the phrase, Zionism is racism. I'm an anti-Zionist. I'm anti the right of the Jewish people to have a Jewish state. Very often that just masks hatred, violence, anti-Semitism in its ugliest form. And we're seeing the lifting of that veil and the lifting of that cover. Number two, what we're finding is anti-Semitism always needs a cover story. It's a deep-seated hatred without getting into the core of the hatred, why it exists metaphysically, socially, politically. But always needs to be a cover story because you have to sell genocide to the masses with a reason that you want to kill each and every Jew alive. And in the ancient times, we were the monotheists who challenged a world of paganists to higher ground. Paganism is an easy, decadent lifestyle, and monotheism is a morally conscious lifestyle. And then when the world turned monotheistic through the rise of Christianity and a few centuries later, the emergence of Islam, we could no longer be hated for being monotheists. So after a couple hundred years, especially in the Christian world, the rabid anti-Zionism based on the myth that Jews killed Jesus and the derivatives of that myth that we reenacted that murder every year and we stole Christian babies and took their blood and incorporated into our matzah. And religious anti-Semitism, where there was a theological cover story for anti-Semitism. And then in the modern, enlightened, cosmopolitan era of the progress in science and organized religion was no longer had cachet. So in the post-Darwin world, social Darwinists had to spin a new theory that Jews are a sub-race and that they have to be eliminated. The same way that nature can only survive if it's cleansed of its weaker elements. Society has to be cleansed of its weaker elements. Now in the modern world of equality, we all share the same DNA. It isn't PC to talk about sub-races or inferior races. There has to be a new cover story, a new narrative. And that narrative has been colonialism, this misplaced, misguided sense. And colonialism was a horrible, horrible chapter in human history. To understand the horrors of colonialism, that's not a pleasant word. After humanity started to move away from slavery, remember, black slavery, African slavery still existed, unfortunately, till relatively recently. But slavery wasn't limited to African slavery. Slavery was a scourge that tormented and that haunted humanity. And in the modern era, as much of the world moved away from slavery, it didn't really abdicate slavery or abandon slavery. It just shifted slavery from individual slavery, in which individual people were taken as slaves, to national slavery, where entire countries in the third world that were underdeveloped, that didn't have the technology, the military, and economic power of European countries, were subjected to, again, they didn't work as slaves on a day-to-day basis, but their resources were bled, their political autonomy was taken, their culture was raided, and just so that European powers could get richer, more ostentatious, more opulent. So that's a horrible, horrible saga in the history of mankind. And essentially, you could claim that two horrible wars were fought over it in the 20th century and were necessary to end that terrible chapter. This is not a colonialist saga. This is not a colonialist narrative. We were the victims of colonialism, of British colonialism. We're returning to our ancient homeland. We'd love to live in peace with those around us. We'd love to share our prosperity with those around us. We don't want to sap them. Any nation that has formed alliances and peace treaties with us has benefited from our prosperity and from our welfare. That's the legacy of Avraham Avinu, Ve'yehi Bracha. It just so happens, sadly, that there's a range of our neighbors who hate us and want to kill us. So we have to defend ourselves, and part of defending ourselves is creating defensible borders and creating a Jewish state that... So this is the furthest thing from colonialism, but the overlay of a narrative to justify mass murder, to justify not homicide, but genocide, is something we've suffered in the past and something we're suffering again. The third issue is a very famous letter the Rambam wrote to the Yemenite community in the 12th century, the Igeret Teman. They were facing a false messiah. They were facing Islamic persecution, Islamic fundamentalist persecution. And the Rambam wrote a letter to the Yemenite community in which he assured them that throughout history, anti-Semites would wield two weapons. There would be the actual weapons, the swords, in this case the guns and the missiles, in our context. But as well, they'd also raise their tongues to challenge us. It's based on a pasuk in Yeshaya, Kol kli yutzar alayich lo yitzlach, v'chol lashon takumitach la'mishpat tarshi. Any weapon raised against you will fail, and any tongue hurled against you will be thwarted. Kol kli lo yitzlach, v'chol lashon takumitach la'mishpat. And for the Rambam in the 12th century, the tongue assault, the verbal assault, was the attempt to repudiate or to disavow, to debunk Judaism. And the famous trials, the monkey trials, we could call them, using a modern term, of the 12th century the 13th century in Barcelona and in Paris, putting Judaism on trial, putting the Talmud on trial. And the Rambam assured the Emunet community that those two attacks against our people, namely the physical military attack and the verbal assault, they would each be defeated based on the prophecy of Yeshaya. V'chol lashon takum itach la'mishpat tarshi. Well, now it's about 700, 800 years after the Rambam, and that second part of the pasuk has even more literal meaning. V'chol lashon takum itach la'mishpat tarshi. We are being tried in the international courts of justice for crimes against humanity, though we're defending ourselves in a moral and just war. And Yeshaya promises us that chol lashon takum itach la'mishpat tarshi, that when they challenge us, we are immoral people. We have lost the lives of soldiers because we did not carpet bomb entire provinces in Gaza as the Americans did, as the Allies did, as is completely accepted, unfortunately, in warfare. And we sacrificed the lives of the precious, precious lives of our children because we went house to house and room to room, and we lost lives and we lost limbs. And the audacity to challenge us in the court of law, this isn't new. This was prophesied by Yeshaya, and that too will fail. That too, they themselves, the goal that a failed state such as South Africa, in which women are routinely abused and in which politics are routinely corrupted, that they would hurl moral accusations against our people, which we celebrate the dignity of life, is galling, and of course it will fail, and they will be relegated and condemned to the dustbin of history because of their moral hypocrisy. And because we say every day in Davening, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech HaMishpat, and Hashem gave us a moral code to create political systems and judicial systems to regulate society. And the notion that we could put Judaism on trial in the 13th century, we could put the state of Israel on trial, because once it's part of the public discussion and the public debate, it's no longer rabid anti-Semites hating us. It's now being brought before a court of law, an unbiased court of law. Well, we've seen how unbiased organizations and unbiased bodies, how they can be rallied and manipulated against our people. Just look at the UN, which offered such great hope to humanity in the post-World War era, and how that's been hijacked by anti-Israel forces to issue these empty and hollow condemnations of our people. So we're seeing all the classic patterns of anti-Semitism returning. The attempt to distinguish between anti-Israel and anti-Semitism, which again, in theory, could be severed and could be detached, but they're really the same. And looking for new cover stories to justify homicide, and launching verbal assaults against our people. We are living through the saga of anti-Semitism. As much as we thought that was part of the past, it isn't. It's part of the continual struggle to represent Hashem in this world. One final note, the challenge of anti-Semitism is, as much as they hate us, and as much as our haters have to be defeated, we can't hate the haters, because our mission, and we're getting closer to that mission, is to inspire the world. So when Mashiach comes, the evil, the killers, the terrorists, those that refuse to see Hashem, they'll be eliminated in the apocalyptic prophecies that we read about. But will all of humanity, the sane, civil, wise people who may be duped right now by the anti-Semites, may be duped by their moral confusion, but they will be enlightened and they will gather in Yerushalayim to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to herald us as the people of Hashem who bring Hashem into this world. So don't let anti-Semitism turn you into a misanthrope, because that would be caving to anti-Semitism and its toxicity. But keep your faith in humanity, even when humanity doesn't live up to your expectations, and know that in the end of days, we won't defeat humanity. We're looking to inspire humanity and to elevate humanity. This is the third section, this third layer of the war, beyond the military political layer, beyond the religious battle of religious values, this struggle all of a sudden against anti-Semitism. Okay. Who's making sound over there?
Oh.
Oh.
It's a tree.
Okay. So that's number three. That's...